live feed.
Sound test two?
We are.
Tom, we're ready. Good evening. This is the August meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission, and everyone is welcome. I will start the meeting by introducing our new members. They were introduced at our June meeting, but now they are official. Ed Garena is our direct provider, and Rob Tilcher is our consumer. And welcome, gentlemen. We're very glad to have you. We'll move on to the minutes. We need to approve both the minutes of the June meeting and the July retreat. Are there any corrections or additions to the June 8th minutes? Then the minutes will stand as printed. Now, the July 10th board retreat, are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? Actually, I had one. I just had a correction under the public comment. We had that Elizabeth Johnson had made a comment, and then somewhere in there, Karen Mansfield, Slow Ag Task Force, disagreed. And then it says after that, Dr. DeZeriga's addition to the report was to determine what other counties have done. I think that's what Elizabeth said about Dr. DeZeriga. I don't know where Karen came into that. She may have made a comment that disagreed with Elizabeth's comment, and I made a comment that Dr. DeZeriga had indeed read and reviewed all of the material. And then I think there was one other thing when we talked about the Community Education Committee that we were going to focus on updating the brochure and website and focusing on educating the public on including properly disposing of medications. That was one of the that's the only changes that I have. Everybody agree with that? Okay, there being no further changes or additions, the minutes will stand as corrected. Okay. Now comes the public comment period, and this is the time when anyone who wishes to make a comment on subjects that are not on the agenda may do so. I think I'll state at this time also, and I will do it again prior to the agenda item, that I see there are people here who will probably want to make comments on the GE crop discussion. And we have cards in the back, so if you want to make a comment, we have cards here with Sonia. If you want to make a comment on that agenda item, if you would please turn them in prior to the end of the presentation by Slow GE Free. However, now we'll go on with the regular public comment time. Please state your name.
Yes, good evening. I'm Eric Greening, and welcome to the new members. I didn't retreat with you all, but I'm glad to see some important issues you will be dealing with coming out of the retreat. On the vulnerable population, how to prepare for emergency evacuation, that's something, of course, I've been sharing concerns about for some time. I would hope that in addition to the normal people you would expect to have, you will invite representation from the SLOCOG staff, our Transportation Planning and Fund Dispersing Agency. I think they might have some valuable things to share and to walk away with. On the obesity task force update in November, I would suggest that you do outreach to the Parks Department and the Parks and Recreation Commission, because they are using obesity prevention as one of the goals of the new parks and recreation element that is being updated, and certainly also the planning department in terms of making sure we have an adequate infrastructure for walking and bicycling. One other issue I'd like to raise that I don't see on a future agenda. As you know, there is legislation in the state legislature and a push, I think LAFCO will be hearing petitions on Thursday, for the county to take over the Los Osos wastewater treatment plant project and all that goes with it, which includes an enormous commitment of staff time, board of supervisors time, et cetera, et cetera. Most of the discussion on this topic, pro and con, has been on the impact on Los Osos, the desires of the people of Los Osos, et cetera. The other 94% of us who live in the county also have an interest in it. And of the three departments that I think are likely to be strongly impacted if the county takes this over, namely planning, public works, and environmental health, one of them is under your purview. And I would be very interested to know what the impacts would be on environmental health if they've looked at it, or they should look at it before a decision is made. For example, what would be the impact on moving forward with the permanent sludge ordinance and other things that are in their realm. So those are concerns I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Bob, with AGP, could you run the timer? Oh, you're running it. Sorry. Okay. We had to use a watch for this one. Okay. Is there any other public comment at this time? All right, then. We'll move forward to our first All right, here we go. Now we have sound again. We welcome Joel Derringer to give his Paradox in Paradise report.
All right. Good evening, commissioners. I guess it's been a few years since I've been here. Probably none of you know the history of how you were formed, but Jeff and I will share that some other day. With the Blue About the only thing that ever came out of the Blue Ribbon Committee many years ago was the formation of the Health Commission. So I'm glad to see you're still here. The Paradox in Paradise report was done by myself, and I'd like to introduce Amy Gilman, sitting next to Supervisor Patterson. It was a year-long study looking at health conditions and health status throughout the Central Coast, in the counties from Santa Cruz and San Benito all the way down to Ventura. It's mostly a compilation of data sources from the census, the California Health Interview Survey, the State Department of Health Services, and the State Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development. We've tried to, as I'll show you, localize a lot of the data so it's relevant not only to the region and the counties, but also to some community levels. I do have hard copies of the full report to distribute to you. I'm going to wait to do that because if I give them to you now, you'll be reading them instead of listening. This is the study area that we looked at in the Central Coast region. As I said, it's from Santa Cruz and San Benito all the way down. We divided the, each of the counties was divided into four, five, or six community clusters based on contiguous zip codes that would allow us to do some more in-depth analysis than we would with just county-level data. On the other hand, it is not drilled down to individual zip codes or even census tracts and census blocks. I'm going to try and talk fast because I know that you have other items on the agenda. The demographics, what this slide is showing, like the rest of the Central Coast, the top line is the age population. We're actually dropping in the 18 to 44 population and growing in the 45 to 64 population. So So the population's getting older, and the sort of earning the working age population is dropping. And this is happening throughout the coast. At the same time, you'll see the top line is the white population is dropping and the Latino population is growing in San Luis Obispo. I will say the gap between the two in San Luis is much greater than in the rest of the coast. In fact, in counties, Monterey County, I think the Latino population is currently equal to the white population and will surpass it certainly by 2010. So San Luis remains much whiter than the rest of the coast and certainly the rest of the state. You know, on the other hand, there is a decreasing white population and increasing Latino population. What we try to do here is break down. Now, this is where we have these community clusters to show that there are disparities not only among counties but also among community clusters. So you'll see the blue bar in this is the non-English-speaking population, and the sort of greenish bar is the Latino population. So it ranges from North San Luis Obispo County, where it's 22.5% Latino, down to San Luis Urban, it's 14.5%, and then the north central part of the county, and that's Santa Margarita, Atascadero, and I believe Templeton is in there, is only 10% Latino. So there are vast differences among various communities. And they also translate into poverty status and, interestingly, high school percent of the population that has high school diploma. If we look at the blue lines on this, families in poverty range from 5.4%, again, in the north coastal area, all the way up to 9.5% in the north county, and that would include Paso, San Miguel, and Shandon. At the same time, you have to look at what the percent of adults without high school diploma is, and it's almost one in five adults in the north part of the county. One of the things, I mean, that's an important health implication for a number of reasons. One for health providers in providing information. Another one has to do with literacy in having a dialogue with a patient. And lack of high school diploma in the parent is also related to health issues with the children. In the report, we also highlighted what we called hidden populations. These are populations that, unless you specifically focus on it and tease it out, aren't ones that generally show up in the health data. The first one is farm workers. These are data from the entire region. So it's an $8 billion industry here on the coast. There's an estimated 100 to 150,000 migrant and seasonal farm workers in the Central Coast region, about 20 to 30% of the state total. The San Joaquin Valley has over 50%, but we do have close to a third. Now, indigenous farm workers, those from southern Mexico, primarily from the states of Oaxaca and Chiapas and several others, make up about one-fifth of the farm worker population. Certainly in the Santa Maria area, there's a lot of Mixtec-speaking farm workers, and this, because they're not even Spanish-speaking as native in their native language, there's quite a bit more barriers that arise, not in access to services and in delivery of services. And then, interestingly, 9 out of 10 farm workers cannot communicate in English. So this is, you know, a major issue for trying to do outreach to that population. And then also the mean wage, farm worker wage, although it's about $9.50 an hour, that's less than half the state's median. It's less than half of the state's median wage, but because it's a seasonal and part-time occupation, it also means that about half of farm workers earn below $10,000 a year. So what does this translate into for health effects? These are data from the CAWS, the California Agricultural Worker Health Survey. Interestingly, overweight farm workers, about 81%, actually these are reversed, male and female. But eight out of 10 male farm workers were either overweight or obese. What the survey did was not only survey farm workers, but do clinical exams. About a third of the men, 31%, had never visited a doctor. And never visited a dentist is about half. And without health insurance is a full 70% of farm workers, according to the survey. Next one is looking at service workers. As you know, our economy here is supported largely by agriculture and the service industry. So about one in five jobs on the Central Coast is either in agriculture or the leisure and hospitality industry. Not quite double, but close to double what the statewide average is on that. Mean wages for these workers are about half of the state hourly mean wage. And there's a higher percent of Latinos in these occupations, and slightly more women are in service occupations than in the total workforce. Here we'll look at just what the differences are in health status or some of the health access issues related to service workers against all occupations. So about one-third of service workers do not have health insurance, compared to about half that for all occupations. They're more likely to not have a usual source of care, more likely to have not been to a doctor within the past year, and also more likely to report themselves in fair or poor health. The last of the three sort of hidden or special populations that we highlighted in the report, we're looking at children and immigrant families. So on the Central Coast, for nearly half, 45% of children have at least one parent that's an immigrant. Now, most of these children are U.S. born, so they're citizens with documented parents. But these are children that are in immigrant families. And these children are more likely to be poor, they're less likely to have health coverage, and they have lower reported health status. One of the issues, which I'm involved in, and I know a number of you are, in the county are trying to get at least health insurance for immigrant children. And through our Children's Health Initiative, we've been successful in reaching several hundred uninsured and uninsurable children, providing them with full coverage. So this is looking at immigration status is related to health status or access to health care. So the red here is U.S.-born children, immigrant children. So 80% of those have health insurance, but whereas an undocumented child, less than half have health insurance. Also, if you look at health status, the second set of graphs, over half of the U.S. citizen immigrant children have reported excellent or very good health status, whereas only less than 30% of the undocumented children have excellent or very good health status. We had four populations we were looking at. I forgot that we'd added seniors. Interestingly, people have a perception here that most seniors are fairly well off. But what we do have is about one out of four seniors fall below 200% of the poverty level. So this is which is currently for a family of two, $26,000 a year. So there is a substantial portion of lower income seniors that are trying to survive on minimal income in Central Coast costs. And not surprisingly, there are disparities among ethnic groups, with the whites being much better off than other ethnic groups. This is comparing different categories of seniors. So all the elderly in the red column, those that are in fair or poor health is 27%. But if you look at Latino elderly in fair or poor health, it's 43%. The lower income, below 200% of the poverty level, is about 40%. And the same if you're on Medi-Cal. So you see that there are these disparities that go across whether you're Latino, whether you're low income, or whether you're on Medi-Cal. Access to care issues, these are ones that we've certainly heard a lot about on the Central Coast. This is looking at provider availability. Now, there's some interesting data here. San Luis Obispo, we keep hearing, has a provider shortage. In actuality, it's about the same as it is statewide. That's not to say that when comparing it to statewide data that the state's doing well, but we have about the same ratio of primary care providers to population than the rest of the state, and we're doing slightly better than the rest of the region. That's not to say that all these providers are actually accessible to everyone. You know, as we know that there are a lot of sort of specialty providers, Medi-Cal recipients, pretty much are excluded from the private provider network, except in pediatrics and OB. Medicare is becoming a less preferential insurance as well. But this gives you some idea of how our county rates compare to the rest of the region and then the rest of the state. Just to give you a notion of what percent of our population here is either on Medi-Cal or uninsured, we're doing somewhat better than the rest of the state on the uninsured. We only have about 14% uninsured compared to 16% in the region and 16% in California. We have a slightly higher Medi-Cal population here than in the rest of the coast. Now, it's hard to say is that's because we have a needier population or our Department of Social Services and various community agencies are doing a better job in getting people on Medi-Cal. Should go back on the children's health coverage, about two-thirds of the children without health insurance are eligible for but not enrolled in Medi-Cal and Healthy Families. So there's a large effort to do more outreach and enrollment. Looking at, this is breaking down what we've tried to do with some of this general data is then break it down by ethnic groups, by income level, and also by immigration status. So here we're looking at the uninsured rates for the non-elderly. Now this includes children. So all the non-elderly, it's 15.9% as we saw before, but Latinos are 28%. Very low income, it's almost 30% are uninsured. And for non-citizens, it's 41%. So you see these three and fourfold disparities between rich and poor, Latino and white, and citizen and non-citizen. It's similar for, this one's looking at adults without a usual source of health care. Latinos are more than twice as likely to not have a usual source of health care as whites. Lowest income are 2.5 times as likely to not have a usual source of care. And non-citizens are 3 times as likely to not have a usual source of care. One of the issues, actually, you should be aware of, and I've mentioned this at several meetings, is while generally San Luis Obispo does much better than the coast and the rest of the state, we are not doing as well on the percent of women giving birth with late or no prenatal care. The last several years, the county has, while the rest of the state has been improving, San Luis Obispo has actually been dropping. So you see here is that 17.6% of women who gave birth in 2001 through 2003 had either late or no prenatal care. In other words, it did not start in the first trimester. And that's not doing as well as the state or the rest of the region. What you'll see here, actually, is we've broken it down by the community clusters. So the problem clusters, once again, you know, is related to demographics, is North San Luis Obispo County, 19% or later no prenatal care. And then the next highest, actually, is North Central. I'm moving fairly quickly. I don't know how much time you'll have to digest, but you can sort of take this home with you. This is just looking at some disease rates, comparing the county, the coast, and the rest of the state. So childhood asthma, these are the percent of children whose parents reported them having asthma is 15%. Probably doesn't come as a surprise to many parents about the higher rates of asthma in the area. Adult hypertension, is also much higher here, not much, but it is higher in San Luis Obispo County than in the rest of the state and in the region. And surprisingly, and this is why you'll hear about the obesity task force quite a bit in the next few months, is nearly 55%, over half of adults, by their own reports, by self-reports, were either overweight or obese. And, you know, while we think of ourselves as very wealthy and active and healthy, that's not the case when you actually look at the data. This is something near and dear to Amy's heart, and our obesity task force is looking at adolescent overweight. The Central Coast region, you'll see about 12% of adolescents are in the 95th percentile of their BMI. So these are the very, very heavy at the top, and that's 12%. Among Latinos, it's closer to 20%. For lower income, it's almost a quarter, and for non-citizens, it's also higher. One thing I want to point out on the Latino chart, you see, while our percent of adolescents who are overweight is the same in the state, our percent of Latinos is actually higher here than Latinos in the rest of the state. So with the more impacted populations, we're doing worse when comparing against those same populations in the rest of the state. And it's the same thing with the lower income populations. So it obviously needs more attention. Glad we'll be able to provide more attention in the coming months through the Obesity Prevention Task Force. Use of health services, cancer screenings. This is looking at the percent of populations that have not utilized cancer screenings. San Luis actually does quite a bit better than the region and the rest of the state, but still, if you look at breast cancer, which is the white, 16% of women had not availed themselves of breast cancer screening in the county. And even though that compares favorably to the region and the state, it's still an important issue to look at. Cervical cancer screening is actually much better. But this is throughout the state. There's, while we have preventive health services available, many people do not either have access to them or not aware of them or don't use them. This is just breaking down women who've never had a mammogram, again looking at the disparities among race and income and immigration status. So while about a quarter of women 30 and over had never had a mammogram, in Latinas that's 43%, in low income it's 36%, and among non-citizens it's nearly half. Oral health. These are data from the oral health needs assessment that were that was just released in February. These are statewide data, but we do actually, I think you may have seen there was some PASO data that the same epidemiologist, Dr. Phipps, had done. We compare a little more favorably, but statewide, about 15% of children do not have dental insurance. That's about twice the percent of kids that don't have medical insurance. And the reason for that is, although Medi-Cal and Healthy Families covers dental, many employer-supplied insurance does not have dental insurance associated with it. Nearly a quarter of children, 2 to 11, have never visited a dentist. And this was in of this statewide survey going into the schools and actually looking in kids' mouths and talking to them and to their parents. 7 out of 10 of the California third graders had some history of decay, both treated and untreated, but 3 out of 10 had untreated decay in their mouths when they were looked at during the survey. And once again, not surprisingly, there are the disparities. This one is looking at ethnic disparities. So Latino kindergartners were 2.5 times more likely to have untreated decay than their white counterparts. This is just graphically showing the children, this is children 2 to 11, who'd never visited a dentist. And what's interesting in it, it's pretty level across the board. While there are some disparities between Latino and white and lower income and higher income, it's still fairly similar. You don't see those two- and three-fold differences. So this is something that cuts across the population. Recommendations. I see we are finishing somewhat on time. These are somewhat general recommendations that we've been making throughout the region. They're not specific to the county. You know, one of the things we hope is to make the data available, and then it's actually being used by quite a few community groups. I've been getting a lot of good feedback from people about it to start looking at their particular issues, because there's quite a bit more data that you haven't seen here. So one is to really be aware of and address the changing demographics in the region and in the individual communities. The second one is to focus on working with some of the hidden populations, service industry workers, farm workers, and immigrants who are not necessarily the people that come to meetings like this and with whom we interact in our systems. Third one is to work on a community level and work with the individual communities. One size does not necessarily fit all in saying we're going to have a county approach. And you really need to look closer at some of the local communities and what their particular needs are and what programs might work there. Initiate community efforts to combat the epidemic of obesity and overweight children and adults. That's something we're starting on in this county. We're actually quite a bit behind the game in what's happening in other counties. And then lastly, is incorporating oral health as a component of physical health. As you see, children are not getting access. They are suffering for it, have untreated decay. And part of that is also how the medical system views oral health. And it really is part of the physical health system. And it's not only, oh, go see the dentist. There's a lot greater role for all health providers. And more information, there's, besides what's on the PowerPoint and what's in the report, we have quite a bit more data on my webpage and some drop-down menus. There's graphs and charts and probably anything else you would like. And if you have any questions after that, we're available. And I don't know if you have time for questions.
Thank you, Joel. I think we do have time if there are any questions from the commissioners. Mr. Hetherington.
Thanks, Joel. I got stuck on the one about the maternal and infant health, saying that over the last couple years that we've seen late or no prenatal care rise. Can that be associated with the closing of General Hospital, where people felt free to come and get their maternal and
I don't think
prenatal
so.
Care?
Prenatal care has generally been, I mean, this is prenatal. And so the clinics, actually, we have more available clinics than before. We have all OBs signed up for Medi-Cal. So I think a large part of it is really outreach. I don't know if it is related to the hospital closure. And, in fact, these data are pre-hospital closure. This is 2001 to 2003. So that, you know, you'd have to look at the trends. I think really the important thing in this is to just focus on community outreach. The services are available, and there's near universal health coverage for prenatal care, even for undocumented women. So I think the answer is really in doing much more community outreach.
Commissioner Ed Garena.
Thank you, Joel. This is wonderful data.
Thank you.
In the area of obesity, did the survey give criteria for to the takers of what is obese at what level, or was this just something that they decided obese?
Well, there's a couple of them, and let's see. I know on the BMI for the children, what they because they, help me here, Amy. This is where Amy's the expert.
The one that was listed for the adolescents also was from the California Health Interview Survey. It was for the over 95th percentile for children being overweight. That is using the CDC standard growth chart. So for the kids, a parent answered, but they also asked the parent what was the height and the weight for the child. And so then after that, they then calculated the percentage on the, according to the BMI chart. So probably there was no education at that time. I think that's probably like an hour telephone interview survey that they do. So for both the adolescents that was provided and the adults.
Yeah, one point I wanted to make on the adults is these were self-reported when people on the phone asked their weight. And so you can imagine that it's actually a little bit worse. Okay, and I'll leave the reports. You can distribute them.
Thank you very much, Joel. We appreciate all your efforts. Okay, next on the agenda is the health effects of genetically engineered crops on San Luis Obispo County that will be presented by a representative from Slow GE Free. I think I want to say again one more time that if you wish to comment on this agenda item after these gentlemen are done, I need for you to give me one of these green cards, which you can get from Sonia. I think that when we're done, also we'll take a very quick, when they are done, we'll take a quick break once again to allow anybody who wishes to speak to sort of sign up. And the reason that we're doing this is it depends on how many people wish to speak as to whether the public comment will be 1 minute or 3 minutes per person. Okay. Are you gentlemen ready?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah. Wait for this to come up on the overhead here. I'm Mike Zelena. I live in Cambria, California, and I am a member of SLO GE Free. And just for the so people have a little background on me, I'm a mechanical engineer by training, and I do software development for a living. I have a consulting company and write engineering software. Wanted to start off by thanking the Health Commission for allowing us to speak today. Hopefully all of you have had a chance to read the report that we put together. You should have gotten that in your Health Commission packet. We're here today because, in our opinion, the GMO task force failed to meet the goal of, quote, setting forth scientific information, pro and con, on the subject of genetically engineered food and crops from the perspective of the health considerations and implications. That was quoted directly from the report put out. The public really deserves to have a balanced and accurate perspective in order to make an informed decision. To provide a little bit of history to the new health commissioners, the selection process was kind of plagued in some problems. The health commission seemed to choose people who were who didn't have a problem with the technology. People who expressed a concern were not allowed on the committee, especially those associated with SLO GE Free. And given the fact that we represented about 50,000 people who supported to ban this technology entirely, it would have been appropriate for us to be invited to participate in that community or that task force to provide our input. But regardless of that history, we want to kind of go forward and look at just the report and not the people who put it together, because this report is relied on obviously by this health commission and the public and the board of supervisors and people who are just concerned about their health and want to have some balanced information. So tonight we're going to give a brief introduction, talk about some of the concerns that we raised that didn't make it into the task force report, and then go over a Santa Cruz GE subcommittee report that was put together kind of in parallel with this. We didn't know this was going on, but they released it shortly after the San Luis Obispo report. And this is not the latest presentation. That's okay. Technology. As stated in the recommendation section of our report, the controversy comes down to a pretty simple concept. Do people have a right to know what they're eating, and do people have a right to know what they're being exposed to in terms of test plots and experimental crops? And so whether or not you believe GMOs are going to save the world or destroy it, you know, that should be answered by open public debate. And unfortunately, for the past 10 years, almost every effort has been made to obscure the facts on GMOs and to exclude the public from that debate while they secretly fill their grocery store shelves. Most people, if you pull them, support GMO technology, and then you tell them, do you realize you're eating it? And they have no idea. And so I think a grower who was quoted just last week in a press release on GMO plums, which are coming out soon, said, it's not a problem unless consumers find out about it. And so that seems to be it. So now that they've been in our food supply for about 10 years, people say, well, nothing bad has happened. It's not a problem. But if you look at the health statistics of our country for the last 10 years, I think you can make a good argument that that's not the case, that some things have occurred. Now, whether they're not, you know, they're associated with GMO technology is open for debate, probably. A little bit of a short scientific summary. GMO technology is not the same as conventional breeding, and it has not been going on for thousands of years. I think a lot of people try to put that forward. And actually, the FDA's own scientists felt GMO technology should be regulated differently, but political appointees, namely a former Monsanto lawyer who landed up returning to Monsanto as the vice president after putting this policy in place, overruled those scientists. And I put one document up here on the screen. Linda Call says, you know, I believe there are at least two situations relative to this document where they are trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. And she says, trying to force an ultimate conclusion that there's no difference between foods modified by genetic engineering and foods modified by traditional breeding practices, is not valid. There are several other documents in our report. Again, these are actual FDA documents from the scientists there. And so, you know, after you read all these things, you kind of realize that the regulations that are in place are more politics-based than science-based. But then in 2004, the National Academy of Sciences, which was quoted in the task force report, decided that, well, indeed, you know, GMO technology carries a higher risk, and this is a chart from their thing that's not very easy to read, but the two bottom ones, which have, you know, almost the most likely possibility of having unintended effects, are the most common GMO crops that are on the market. And yet, that was 2 years ago, and in spite of these conclusions, there's still no required tests for GMO crops. The companies who produce the crops perform the tests, and those same companies just provide a summary to the FDA, not the actual data. And the GMO Task Force report did mention that, that this is a voluntary consultation. And in the end, the FDA takes no position on the safety of the crop. It just sends a letter to the company saying it's up to you to make sure it's safe. Moving on to some of the things that were raised to the task force that didn't make it into the report, probably the most important one is the USDA audit that was conducted in December of 2005. Which found that the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, which approves GMO test plots, these are things that are not released. They're just the things that the companies put in the ground to see if they're going to be viable, is basically failing to meet their duties. And this is just and the graphic is the number of test plots up until July of this year. And you could see California had 2,393 of them. And there have been about, well, there's the next slide. There's about 10,600 different GMO test crops. So those are unique crops that have been planted for either food, pharmaceutical, or industrial purposes on over 49,000 different field sites around the country. And the fact that the USDA department in charge of this is not, you know, tracking these things, there's a couple of quotes coming up from the audit report that came out. You know, the precise locations of all GE field test sites planted are not always known. Regulators did not always notice violations of their own rules and didn't make sure that the crop was destroyed when it was done. In some cases, they found seeds 2 years later in a silo that were supposed to be destroyed immediately after the test in the ground. And so clearly that's a huge thing. I mean, we have no idea what we're being exposed to. You know, this stuff is not accessible at the state or local level, and we think that needs to change. The next big thing, one comment, are GMOs an agricultural issue? A lot of times you'll hear, well, farmers need to have this technology. That's great, but the fact that citizens could be exposed to these test plots, and I'll show in the next slides that they make it into the food supply in a lot of cases, it makes it a citizen issue. I think we need to seriously look into these problems. One comment, people will say, well, the USDA is working on this, and they actually were audited 10 years ago and said they were going to fix a lot of these problems and still haven't. And so I think it's up to local, you know, it's got to happen at local control. It's not going to happen at the federal level. The next big topic is contamination incidents. There was one mention in the task force report about Starlink, but there's numerous other things that have occurred. And actually, the Union of Concerned Scientists did a report a couple years ago where they found that virtually, you know, all varieties of corn, soybeans, and canola have some level of contamination. And it was, you know, in the point percent range. It wasn't high, but it's enough to, since they've only been in the ground for so many years, to be a serious problem. Here's a list of a sampling of GMO contamination incidents. The Santa Cruz report listed about 13 different ones. Starlink was mentioned in the GMO task force report. It landed up costing taxpayers $13 billion. So the companies who create these crops don't clean it up. The public does. And Starlink is still showing up in shipments up until a year ago to places like South America, even though one of these that's interesting to point out is UC Davis shipping tomato seed lines around the globe. Here's UC Davis could arguably be the preeminent biotechnology school in the planet, and they are accidentally shipping GMO seeds around the world, labeling them as non-GMO varieties. The next thing was a report by Friess and Schubert, which was presented to the task force on at least three different occasions, starting in May 2005 when I appeared before the task force, and yet it received no mention in the task force report. In this article, Friess and Schubert provided an overview of the safety testing of GMO crops and kind of dissected where the problems were and gave specific examples of where the idea of pleiotropic effects, things that are happening to crops that we didn't intend on them. It was an unintended effect of the transgenic process, and BT corn is one that is most interesting because here's different companies genetically engineering a crop. Obviously, the genes are going in different places, and yet they're having the same effect, this increased lignin effect, where they have more woody stems. And so that's, I think this definitely should have been included in the report, and again, it was completely omitted. Under the Pushtai affair, which was the studies done by Dr. Pushtai on the GMO potatoes, it seemed like there was just an effort to exclude anything that validated the testing that he did. There are numerous documents supporting the research. There was a letter from 23 scientists, I believe, and numerous articles that were in the very same journals that were quoted that were not. That Pushtai wrote to. So in other words, they were quoting from the very same journal paper and version, and yet his response wasn't included in there. So, and then finally, regarding the regulatory agencies, you know, this idea of improved regulations was talked about in the task force report, but that has kind of been a mantra ever since GMOs were approved in 1992, and yet really nothing has been done. There's no required testing still. It's all voluntary. And even for the NAS recommendations, I said that earlier, there hasn't been anything tangible done to change the process. And so it's been a lot of talk. And in the case of the FDA, they talked about in the task force report, generally recognized as safe, which is part of the substantial equivalence idea. And the FDA isn't even following their own laws as far as verifying those claims. And I felt that was a very important thing because as the public, you have a law in place that is not being followed. And, of course, it's confusing because the company gets to point to that law and say, see, look at these tough regulations. And yet, in reality, the law isn't being followed at all. So I think that sums up my part. And I'm going to turn it over to Mark, and he's going to go through some of the Santa Cruz report.
Hi, good evening, commissioners. I want to thank you for allowing us to speak tonight to you about this very important issue that concerns a lot of us. My name is Mark Phillips, and I'm from Atascadero. I'm also a mechanical engineer, but I'm retired, so neener, neener. The citizen report that we wrote in response to the task force report references another report from Santa Cruz County Public Health Subcommittee on Genetic Engineering. This is what we're calling the Santa Cruz report. And it will be available, or perhaps is available, if the website is up and working again. We had a crashed website. Hacked, I believe, is the proper word.
Yeah.
The Santa Cruz Committee primary goals overlap with those of the SLO GMO Task Force, yet the reports are extremely different in composition and tone. And reading these reports, it's pretty easy to see. Starting with a selection process that was transparent and allowed all viewpoints to be represented, the Santa Cruz subcommittee proceeded in a methodical manner to gather relevant data, which was, quote, discussed, revised, edited, and accepted by the voting members. Contrast this with the SLO GMO Task Force report, which was compiled days before presenting to the Health Commission with little to no public input or input from the task force as a whole. In some cases, entire sections appeared for the first time in the final report and were never discussed at a public task force meeting. It is refreshing to read the unequivocal statements in the Santa Cruz report. Nearly all of the public concerns left unanswered in the SLO GMO Task Force report are adequately addressed in the Santa Cruz report. These include, and I'm just going to start reading some quotes that are from the Santa Cruz report. Most all of these have footnotes to them. They did a very good job of documenting the work that they did. So these are not just unsubstantiated comments. And again, to point out, these were all approved by a majority of the members of the subcommittee, so it's not just one person speaking here. The first one, health testing of the effects of exposure to GE organisms is not required by any government agency. Lack of comprehensive safety testing leaves a potentially dangerous scientific void in the knowledge available about the short and long-term effect of GE foods. This is something that SLO GE Free has been saying since before Measure Q was voted on, and all we get are these, you know, vague and ponderous regulations that are thrown at us, but in the end, there are no required testing. Another one, adequate safeguards do not exist to prevent GE contamination of non-GE crops, plants, insects, domesticated animals, wildlife, and wildlands that can result from forces of nature and human causes. Once GE pollen is released into the environment, there is no ability to reverse the process. The resulting impacts on ecosystems are unknown. The findings of the USDA audit, which Mike mentioned earlier, were prominently presented, as they should be, in the Santa Cruz report. The Santa Cruz report also dispels any thought that the California Department of Food and Agriculture, CDFA, can fill in the gaps. Quote, by its own admission, the CDFA currently lacks the in-house expertise to perform thorough assessments of proposed GE research projects. In addition, critical information is often classified as confidential and is frequently unavailable to CDFA in its evaluation of possible environmental hazards posed by GE experimentation. Here again, we find that state and federal regulations are inadequate, and the only option left for us who are concerned about this is on the local level, which is where we're at right now. Regarding the efficacy of current regulations, the Santa Cruz report states, quote, the laws guiding FDA, USDA, and EPA on GE crops predate the development of GE crops. GE manufacturers are not required to provide proof of safety of GE crops. They are not required to share actual data with the FDA, but only summaries of their in-house assessments. California has had no EPA inspections between 1987 and 2004 on more than 11,000 tests of GE crops. Regulatory agencies and GE producers do not always follow protocols, and at times there is no consequence when these procedures are not followed. Once GE crops are deregulated, no buffers are required between GE crops and non-GE crops, and there is no required public notification of the planting of GE crops. Regarding contamination, quote, it is widely recognized by scientists, regulators, and the genetic engineering industry that the migration of genetically engineered organisms beyond their intended destination on the farm is inevitable. This argument is further substantiated by a partial list of U.S. contamination incidents presented in Table 1. And that was a table that Mike showed part of earlier. And again, the Starlink contamination alone cost taxpayers $13 billion. Not many people knew that. Continuing on the subject of contamination, this puts consumers at risk of eating genetically engineered food not intended for human consumption and of eating genetically engineered pharmaceuticals and polymers grown in food crops and in open fields. Also, farmers and gardeners who choose not to grow GE crops have no legal recourse if contaminated by GE pollen or seeds. We could go on to read the entire report, and it really is an excellent report. Every page of it has got important information on it that needs to be addressed. And certainly the task force report that we got from our county doesn't address these issues. As we believe any balanced appraisal of the facts on GMOs would conclude, the Santa Cruz Committee ultimately recommended an interim precautionary moratorium. However, acknowledging the absolute safety cannot be proven, the Santa Cruz subcommittee wisely provided 5 clearly defined conditions to lift the moratorium. Even though a minority of the Santa Cruz subcommittee dissented with recommending a precautionary moratorium, the criteria for lifting the moratorium was agreed to unanimously. And these 5 criteria are: 1, field trials of genetically engineered crops are contained to prevent contamination of organic and non-GMO crops and weedy relatives. 2, growing of genetically engineered pharmaceuticals and industrial compounds shall be done in state or federally licensed, secure, enclosed indoor laboratories. 3, liability regulations are in place to protect organic and conventional farmers and gardeners from contamination by genetically engineered crops. 4, GMO seeds and rootstock are labeled so that farmers and gardeners can choose whether or not they want to grow GMO crops. And 5, the types and location of GMO crops currently being grown and tested are communicated to the Agricultural Commissioner and available to the public upon request. The Santa Cruz Health Commission unanimously agreed to recommend the Santa Cruz Subcommittee report with its precautionary moratorium to the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors. The Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors subsequently voted unanimously to adopt the precautionary moratorium, so they're not going to allow the growing of GE crops in Santa Cruz. The laws of physics are not different 100 miles north of San Luis Obispo County. Except for some agricultural statistics particular to Santa Cruz County, everything in the Santa Cruz report is germane and applies to the San Luis Obispo County. Santa Cruz has about $420 million a year of agriculture, and SLO has about $600 million. It is our hope that this health commission considers adopting a similar set of recommendations for our Board of Supervisors. This health commission has the ability to include the public in decisions regarding GMOs. They can do this simply by acknowledging the fact that citizens have a right to know what they are eating and know what they are being exposed to. The recommendations outlined in our report would help achieve this goal. With this knowledge, the public can vote with their dollar to decide whether they support or oppose GMOs. For the public, we would encourage all those listening to demand that they have access to this information from not only politicians, but more importantly, your grocery store and the local farmers you support. Thank you for your time, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
I wanted to go through these last couple slides that we had at the last minute here, but you know, the question is, who's watching out for us? And I think that's why we're before this health commission and why we've been working so hard locally. You know, the USDA has failed according to the audit to regulate things. The FDA has problems with political interests overruling the scientists. And the state, honestly, is just out of the loop, and they'll be the first ones to admit that the CDFA doesn't know what's being planted here. And so far, the county hasn't expressed much interest in knowing what's happening here. But we're hoping that this health commission will do that. I mean, you could change the course of this debate by allowing citizens to have access to this information or working towards that goal. And like Mark said, the recommendations would definitely do that. And I just wanted to finish up for the public who's listening to this and who's concerned. You know, certified organic agriculture is still the best way to avoid GMOs, although that's, you know, so it's important to support that and just get to know what you're eating. You know, ask your grocer and ask the farmers that you support at farmers markets, which are all over the county. I think that's the best thing to do. Thank you.
Do the commissioners have any questions of these gentlemen? Commissioner Hetherington.
Thank you very much for bringing another dimension to this debate. And I know that it's been frustrating for everybody that voted in support of knowing what they're eating. And I think that we need to hone our comments and our thoughts tonight on just that. How is it affecting the public? And what guarantees do we have? And from what we've read in both the GMO Task Force report, probably to a larger degree in your report this evening, nobody's watching. Nobody's testing. nobody cares if it goes into the organic farms or if it goes to the neighbor next door. And so I want to start the discussion. I know we're going to take a break, but I just really want us to focus on the health of the people.
And your question was?
My question was just a thank you.
Is there anyone else that has questions of Mark or Mike? Commissioner Donnelly?
I don't have a question now, but I may have a question during the discussion. Will we be able to ask then?
I don't see why not. Okay. We're going to take a little break prior to the public comment on this subject because I want to make it clear that I need these green slips of paper in order to know who is coming up to make public comment. And I only have four of them. I can't believe with all the people in the room, only four people want to comment. So we'll take a little break for those who want to fill those out. They're available here. So we'll take 2-3 minutes, long enough if anybody wants to excuse themselves for a moment. The meeting will come back to order. We have, I believe, 18 requests to speak on the issue of the last report. So we will take, I'm going to ask you to move, we'll use both podiums. I'll give the name of the first person that's going to talk and the next person. And as you switch back and forth, I'll try and name the next person after that so that we can be moving back and forth between the podiums as so we can everybody can get their comments in. The comments will be limited to 1 minute each. So first we have Jesse Arnold. Second we have Nancy Reinstein. Following Nancy will be Miranda Leonard. I'm afraid you do need to state your name though again.
I will. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I hope you will support the citizens' response report and send that on to the supervisors and suggest that they also support that report. We definitely need labeling. We need support of House Resolution 5269, the Genetic Engineering Food Right to Know Act, and we do need a precautionary moratorium. And I think a body like this supporting health would definitely support organic growing, and I would like to just take one quote from Benefits of U.S. Organic Agriculture, a report by Luann Lohr of the University of Georgia, and she says, overall, the findings of this study are surprising in the strength of support for the hypothesis that organic farming produces more benefits than conventional farming. Nearly every indicator tested across the range of economic, social, and environmental benefits favors organic systems. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Nancy Reinstein, followed by Miranda Leonard.
Hi, I'm Nancy Reinstein, and thank you all for being here and being concerned. My concern is that it's really important what we tell the public, and I hope that you will very carefully read each of the reports that you've been given. And like one of my big concerns, I have a PhD in nutrition and I'm a registered dietitian, is the effect on health. And as you will see in the report, even Monsanto, when they tested their corn, it raised the blood sugar of rats who were just fed the corn and other foods for 12 weeks, and we have an epidemic of diabetes. Most testing is not being done, and it's really important for us to be able to choose whether or not we eat this for our health's sake. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Miranda Leonard, followed by Eric Greening.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Miranda Leonard, and I'm a resident of Slo County for 10 years this August. Pretty excited about that. I would just like to say that the integrity of this report seems to be suspect to me, and I'm disheartened by the lack of transparency in the selection process of those who contributed to the report. I'd like for all viewpoints to be considered, and perhaps in an effort to do so, I'd like to encourage the adaptation of the recommendations that were provided by the Santa Cruz report, or at least some more comprehensive look at the issue of genetically engineered crops for our county. I'd like for the citizens of our county to have access to information about what is grown in our county and what is in our foods. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Eric Greening, followed by Mark DiMaggio.
I'm Eric Greening. I urge you not to forward the HCGMO task force report to the supervisors to tell them you are taking more time so you can agendize a consideration if you turn to page 14 of the Slo GE Free report. Consideration of the questions, getting answers to, and consideration of those recommendations as well as the Santa Cruz one as soon as you can get them on an agenda. I would also encourage you to agendize consideration of opposition to Senate Bill 1056, which is a state bill that would erode or actually eliminate local control and the right of local people to protect their health. Since those of us who choose to protect our health by eating organic where possible need to be able to continue to make that choice, please recognize we have 61 certified organic farms in this county. They are very important to our economy, the people who eat from those, and from the many uncounted organic home gardens need to be able to have a meaningful choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Next is Mark DiMaggio, followed by Mark Lee.
Good evening. I'm Mark DiMaggio. I live in Cambria. I teach science at Paso Robles High School. For about 3 billion years, nature has been moving genes from one species within that species to other individuals within the same species. And now, in less than a generation, humans have developed the technology to move genes across species boundaries. Genetic engineering presumes that humans have the wisdom necessary to do this intelligently and with acceptable risk. And I really question whether or not that is the case. In my view, humans shouldn't be engineering organisms at all, yet, as you know, we are. I think at the absolute very least what we should do is let it be known whether or not those engineered organisms are in our food supply and whether we're serving that food to our children. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Mark Lee, followed by Kathy Olson.
My name is Mark Lee. I'm a biologist with the San Luis Obispo County Department of Agriculture, and I'm actually just here to give you a quick update on the other GE committee that's going on at the same time. To remind the commission, with all of the concerns that were raised during Measure Q, there are actually two committees formed, the GMO Health Commission Task Force, and then the GE Crops Committee that's looking more at farmers and industry groups and how they can coexist between GMO growers and non-GMO growers. And just to cut this short, basically we will be going to the Board of Supervisors. The Genetically Engineered Crop Committee will be reporting back to the Board of Supervisors at the next meeting on Tuesday, August 22nd. I provided the commission with the full report, and if they have any questions, you can contact our department.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, we do all have that report now, I believe. So next is Kathy Olson, followed by Jackie Crabb.
Hi, my name is Kathy Olson, and I just want to say that I'm a citizen of this county, and I want to know where my food is grown, and I want to know how it's grown, and I feel like I have the right to know that. And I also want to be sure that when I buy organic, that it's not going to be contaminated by GE crops, and that so measures should be taken to make sure that the GE things that are grown are not going to contaminate the organic farms. And also, I think it's important to label GE products, because if there is a problem with them and they are causing health problems, there's no way to trace them if they're not labeled, because we don't know whether they're genetically engineered or not.
Thank you, Kathy. Next is Jackie Crabb, followed by Mike Broadhurst.
Hi, my name is Jackie Crabb. I'm with Farm Bureau, and I'm here in San Luis Obispo. I'd like to touch on the fact that everyone's comparing this report, the Health Commission's report, with the Santa Cruz report, but I feel they are looking at the wrong report and the wrong committee. Back in 2004, our Board of Supervisors did ask that there be a committee formed to look into GMOs, all-inclusive, all topics, health included, slow GE-free was at the table. But unlike the Santa Cruz report or committee, is that our Health Commission committee had a narrow focus. It was on health, and it was scientifically based, and they decided not to take a position. However, they're being drawn into a political agenda to take a position and are doing everything they can to discredit the members. And I urge that you take this as planned to the Board of Supervisors so they can see this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Next is Mike Broadhurst, followed by Christian Thornson.
Hi, I'm Mike Broadhurst. My wife and I operate a small farm near Cambria, and I was a member of the GMO Task Force for the Health Commission. I prepared 3 minutes worth of comments, so let's see if I can make this semi-intelligible. Okay, the members of the task force did make every effort to produce a balanced report. It's important to understand that to ensure balance, our approach was based on the scientific method. Let me emphasize that again, the scientific method. The underlying tenet of this method is that single observations, facts or information, must be critically judged, and all possible inferences must be considered. This means you must consider all possible alternatives to the obvious before drawing conclusions. We tried our best to do that. On the other hand, let's look at SLOG's freeze approach. They tailor their facts and information to suit their preferred interpretation. Alternatives are not discussed. Information not supporting their position is not disclosed. So,
Thank you very much, Mike.
I will not debate the position or only their methods. If they want to get my attention, you need to discuss what might not support your case.
Thank you, Mike. Next is Christian Thornson, followed by Courtney Coleman.
Hi, my name is Kristen Thornson, and I just kind of want to apologize because I've been moving all day and I'm really tired, but I'm a physician assistant and also an acupuncturist, and I have family that's been working in medicine and using plants as medicine that go back over 300 years. And I'm really concerned about the effects of the plants, what's going to happen in their bodies. About every week or with great frequency, I get things in the mail from the chemical companies, take this off the market, don't use it, don't give it to any of your patients.
Could you lean closer to the microphone? Thank you.
Okay. And I'm very concerned about plants being created that produce chemicals. I'm sure you're all familiar with the DES and the DES babies. Although they did research it, the reason that the babies were born with little arm buds and leg buds was because they gave the medication in the evening when it had been tested in the morning.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Courtney Coleman, followed by Ginny Montine.
Hi, I've lived in, I'm Courtney Coleman. I just started a business called Cook Well with Courtney, where I go to people's homes and teach them how to cook with organic whole foods. And I know that is a huge issue, because since I've been eating really clean and organic foods, my health has just really blossomed. My skin is shining. I've done some studying about organically grown versus genetically modified foods, and I know that there's pesticides actually bred into Roundup Ready soybeans and corn. And when you're eating pesticide that's actually in the flesh of the plant, it's going right into your body, and it's very dangerous. I don't condone it at all. I ask for serious consideration of this, also because of cross-pollination that can occur from, you know, plots of land where organic is being grown versus non-organic. So thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jenny Montine, followed by Bill Walter.
Hello, my name is Jenny Montine. I'm director of SLO Cancer Action Now. This is a group that I started after being diagnosed with cancer and still dealing with the late effects of cancer. And our group addresses the environmental links to cancer, but this also applies to other diseases that are occurring much more rapidly in our population. We need to address health, and I think you need to remember that first, do no harm. You know, that is the oath that doctors take. It's what health practitioners practice, and it's what their patients hope that they're practicing. And I think that as a health commission, you have a unique opportunity now to make a stand.
Thank you.
And first, do no harm.
Thank you for your comments. Next would be Bill Walter, followed by Sherry Lewis.
Hi, my name is Bill Walter. I'm from Rio Grande. I'd just like to remind you all, if you think this is a trivial issue, that the no smoking ban started right here in San Luis Obispo, and everyone thought that was a trivial idea. But now even Irishmen can't smoke in bars. And I would also like to remind you, I don't know how many of you have ever read a book by Kurt Vonnegut called Cat's Cradle. For those of you who haven't, I would recommend it. It's about the unintended consequences of science.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Sherry Lewis. Do you have lamb chop with you? Followed by Hilla Daniel or Danelle.
Hi, Sherry. I am Sherry Lewis. I often get that. And it is funny every time. I live in San Luis Obispo. Mostly I have nothing new to add. I just want to reiterate what everybody was saying before about following the report that these two men have made to you. I want you not to accept the task force report and send it directly on to the Board of Supervisors, but I wish you would consider maybe putting it on the agenda, would consider the report from Santa Cruz and discuss that and maybe bring some of that information in too. And just don't forget the genie in the bottle situation. This can be a very big deal, a very big deal. So just be careful. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Hilla Danelle, followed by Shauna Galassi.
Hi, I'm Hilla Danelle. I live in Cambria. After working 29 years in special education, it seems to me that this is an important thing to consider for the children of the future. There haven't been a whole lot of reports on the effects yet, but it seems to me it's kind of like when you put the lobster in the cold water, or the frog in the cold water, and nothing happens. He doesn't jump out, but you heat him up slowly. Well, you know. And that's what I see as the problem, because down the road somewhere, we're all going to pay for this if it isn't regulated and gotten rid of. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment. Next is Shauna Galassi, followed by Jono Kincaid.
Hi, I'm Shauna Galassi from Arroyo Grande, and I'm a concerned citizen. And I feel we need to take measures in this county to protect our organic farmers from cross-pollination by GE crops. And I'd also like to urge the county to require labeling of genetically engineered produce at farmers markets. I feel as consumers, we have the right to know what we're purchasing and feeding our kids. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Jono Kincaid, followed by Daniela Arnon.
Hello, John O'Kincaid from Santa Margarita, born and raised here almost 23 years now. I would like for the Health Commission to strongly consider the Citizens Report and to follow in the footsteps of Santa Cruz County into considering labeling genetically engineered food. Next month I'm moving to Santa Cruz to study at the UC, to study community studies and how food relates to environmental and social issues. So this is something that is very, very concerning to me. I often think that Santa Cruz County would serve as a great model for Slo County in the future when transitioning to a sustainable way of life when it was no longer an option but a necessary move. So I think that they can have a good model for us. However, I think that we might end up with some problems that we won't have such the option if all of our crops are cross-contaminated with these problems. My biggest concern is not the long list of scientific reasons that you have in front of you that I would wish that you study, but I am more concerned about the public bodies from the FDA on down to this board who are ignoring the public, the science, and the consumers, and that we only get 1 minute to speak at meetings like this.
Thank you for your comment. Is Daniela here? Okay, Daniela is our last speaker. You have 1 minute, Daniela. I know you came in late, so.
Hi. Thank you, Daniela Arnon. I'll just read you a little bit from the County Board of Supervisors of Santa Cruz on their precautionary moratorium. In light of what has been researched and found to be true about GE crops, the adoption of a precautionary moratorium is a conservative and restrained response, says Christine Rosenau, executive director of the Watsonfield-based Ecological Farming Association. The subcommittee's conclusions include health risks of GE crops include allergens, toxicity, carcinogens, altered fertility, increased antibiotic resistance, novel infectious diseases, and adverse impacts on human immune and endocrine systems. Pharmaceutical crops are used in open-air trials, and they can lead to contamination of food crops. And there, as you know, that many countries are opposed to genetically engineered foods. The WTO has been trying to force the European Union to have them. And
thank you.
Seriously, I would like to consider that the Ag Commissioner be notified of any such crops, and I
think
you consider a moratorium since it's not safe at all. And it could be kept in a lab to satisfy the plants for 50 or 100 years, but I think there are a lot of risks. And I think you should think about your grandchildren, and if we destroy our food supply, it's not good for anyone. The seed is sacred, should be kept whole, and food is medicine, so keep your medicine pure. Don't toy with the seed. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody who came and commented tonight. I appreciate that you observed the one-minute comment period and that we were able to get through all the comments. So now it's time for us to have any discussion that we might want to have as commissioners. So let us go forward with that. And where shall we start? Pam has made her comment. Commissioner Hetherington has made her comment. Is there anybody else that wants to make a comment about this procedure? Commissioner O'Dell.
We have had a task force appointed, and they were the most objective people we could find who applied for the job and was from written material. We have their report. Their instructions were to be a fact-finding, which they did. And so I would think that we should forward this to the Board of Supervisors to receive and file, just like the Ag Commissioner is doing on the 22nd, to receive and file with no action. But that does not prevent us as a commission to take any other action that we would like to take. So I don't want to restrict that. But I think we should, and these people work very hard, and it's a fact-finding, and we should forward it to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner O'Dell. Commissioner Horn?
As a member of the GMO Task Force for the Health Commission, I'd like to remind the public that the Health Commission Task Force was given the mission to only look at the health effects of GMOs. We were not requested to expand our task force mission. We stayed exactly where we were given our mission. Should this body out here like to have something expanded, and you certainly have the right to do that, the place to do that would be to go to the Board of Supervisors and request something like the Santa Cruz study. That's not what we were requested to do, and we did not expand it, even though we were pressured greatly to do that. That's not what we were supposed to do.
Commissioner Donnelly.
Thank you very much. I read all three reports in full, and I wanted to say a couple things. One, I do agree that our task force did exactly what their mission was. When I read it, it seemed objective to me, and I tried to read all of the reports with really an open mind, because I'm kind of new to this process and I'm learning. And I thought that our task force did an excellent job. With that being said, I gleaned information that I felt was important from all three reports. Health related, for sure. The Santa Cruz County task force report also had other information that was not health related, but that I think is important to this GMO issue. And I'm all about freedom of information, so I don't know why all of our bodies, the Board of Supervisors, can't read all three reports. Same thing with the other committee that's working right now at the direction of the Board of Supervisors. I think that there may have even been important information on some of the legal aspects, or there was a lot of different GMO aspects that aren't related to health that was in there, and so I don't see any reason why everybody can't read it all, because there was important information for everybody. Thanks.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Thank you, Commissioner Donnelly. I couldn't have put it better myself. I think that given the fact that our task force was given the mandate not to come up with any recommendations, it's in our purview as the commission receiving the GMO task force report to do what we think is best for the public health. And I think actually including the Santa Cruz document, the citizens report, is key for the Board of Supervisors to understand the scope of the concerns of the people and the protection of public health. That being said, I would like to send these reports to the Board of Supervisors with a couple of recommendations. And I think that's our job to do tonight, is to say that we think that there is information in all of these reports that needs to be considered. I would love to send a recommendation that we expand the task force to mirror the Santa Cruz task force. I think that that is in our purview. I think it's our moral responsibility. And I think that it would be up to the board at that point whether or not they would choose to honor those recommendations. But I think for us to just send a report, just our GMO task force report, would be only giving them part of the picture. I think people have put a lot of work into these reports. It scares the bejeebies out of me that the feds aren't doing a whole lot. The states aren't doing anything. And if we can't do it on the local level, then the contamination is going to happen. I know Scott's out in the audience, and I'm just dying to ask him how many GE crops are being tested at Cal Poly. Scott? Could you come up to the microphone?
Scott, could you come forward? Sorry. This is what you get for attending the meeting.
Well, I found out that donuts are
We don't have anything in the field right now, but we have had BT corn, BT sweet corn.
Is that BT 11?
Yeah. Stuff that wasn't, you know, the stuff that didn't have the marker in it. So that's all we've got. There's small things in greenhouses that are, you know, usually student projects, but they're usually related to Arabidopsis, if that's any help.
Is there anything at the college level that prohibits you from telling the community if you're experimenting with GE crops?
That prohibits me?
Mm-hmm.
No. If there was, I'd probably be reprimanded later after I had said it.
There's no, like, Monsanto thing when they give you money that says, you know, we don't want you to discuss.
No. So if I do research on an experimental compound or something like that, and they are trying to, there's some sort of market value attached to that, I have to sign a contract. But I haven't done that recently. When I was at UC Davis, that was, you know, that's part of their research, it's part of their marketing, that you can't report. You can't report for a year, year and a half. There's a certain clause, but it's for marketing purposes. And you can either sign it or not sign it. If you don't sign it, you don't do the research.
Well, that's generous of them.
Yeah. But it's pretty much, it's your choice.
Was that a Monsanto crop that you grew before? And did you sign one of those statements at that point?
No, it was Syngenta. It was all part of just whatever we were trying to feel out the community. That project.
Yeah, I hope you got a good taste of how they feel about it. Thank you.
Who's next?
Scott Durham.
Okay. I would like to make one comment about that. I hear that people think that I've got a certain amount of money from Monsanto or from Dow Agro, and I see that reported, you know, on the Slow GE site, and I wish I'd gotten that money. I didn't. I got denied by Monsanto and by Dow Agro, but I guess it's a moot point because I would have taken it. And the research was designed for looking at herbicide resistance, completely something that Slow GE Free should actually support, because it's how herbicides are creating this resistance in wheat populations. So anyhow, it's ludicrous to me to hear that comment.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. I'm not done yet.
Thank you. No, I imagine you aren't.
Thank you, Scott, for coming up and answering that question. We had 18 speakers tonight, 19. We had two that were, you know, okay with the report just as it is, and we had, I think, 14 or 15 people that are very concerned about what's happening with these crops. So my tendency is that we send all three reports to the Board of Supervisors. We ask that they expand the task force to mirror pretty much the selection that Santa Cruz used by each supervisor appointing two people, public health officer being one of, you know, on the committee too. I think transparency is important, and I know that this GMO task force has been dogged by questions about its veracity as its membership makeup. And so I don't want to say anything more about that because I know that people have suffered the last 6 months with accusations and not feeling fulfilled. So I think that's where I'm headed this evening, is that these three reports go to the board with some recommendations from us.
Do you want to make a motion, Commissioner Hetherington?
I could go ahead and make the motion now just to that effect, that we send all three reports to the Board of Supervisors and ask for them to consider expanding the task force under their purview.
There's a motion on the floor to send all three reports to the Board of Supervisors, although I think they probably have them anyway, but and to expand the GMO task force to
under their purview.
To expand their
appoint perhaps a task force under their purview that is similar to the one in Santa Cruz, because I think that report, like Debbie said, brought out a lot of things that maybe we didn't look at
as our task force, and some extra things that are equally as important to the public health.
So let me understand. Let's get it clear.
Okay.
So in
all three reports
doing,
go
right
with the recommendation that the board expand or select another GMO task force similar to the one in Santa Cruz.
There's a difference between expand and select another task force. Which
well,
is it you're recommending?
I would go either way.
You have to make a motion. You have
okay.
to make your motion one.
Then I would
another.
Say that they start afresh.
I'll second that.
Okay. What was it, funny? To select or to expand?
It was to select.
Select their own task force.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. It has a second. The motion is now open for discussion. Commissioner Donnelly.
I agree with that. I would just add one thing in that if they do create a new task force, that at least one member from our task force that the Health Commission had be on that task force. A liaison. Not really a liaison, I'm sorry. But at least one member that was part of our task force be part of the new task force. That way, because they were part of it and they have all of the information. Am I not?
No, I know what you're
here?
Saying.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, an amendment has been proposed to the initial motion. Does the initial maker of the motion wish to accept that amendment?
I would entertain accepting that, except I would add two commissioners from the Health Commission to be on the task force, one that was involved and one that was not involved, so that we feel that we've, you know,
was involved with the current, you want
right. two representatives
think,
from this group.
You think you're going to get somebody from
yeah. Okay, one member and one alternate.
Okay, no, let's be serious. Well, what how do you want to say two members? If
yeah.
that's what you want to
yeah.
say, then say it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we need to
Debbie wants to barter with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Amendment actually was just that a member of that task force. It didn't necessarily need to be a health commissioner, but that's something that we could discuss.
That's different. So let's move back to the original maker of the motion. The amendment is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors if they form a new task force to include a member of the old let's not say old, of the Health Commission's GMO Task Force. Are you agreeable to that?
Along with a Health Commissioner. Okay. I'll go for one of the old GMO Task Force members and a Health Commissioner.
Okay. So the motion has been amended to send all three reports to the Board of Supervisors and to recommend that the Board of Supervisors form another task force to examine the GMO question. And members of that task force should include one health commissioner and one member of the Health Commission's GMO task force. Do I have it correctly?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and the seconder of the motion is in agreement?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, now, the motion is still on the floor for discussion. Is there any other discussion of this motion at this time? Commissioner Garena.
Just a question on the expansion. Are we asking for an expansion of the goals as well? Different goals?
I think the intention is that they would have different goals. They would start with, it would be up to the board. I think this is getting this out of our bailiwick and into the appropriate bailiwick of the Board of Supervisors. Is that how everybody understands it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that it's just worth mentioning that Jackie Crabb did mention that there was a task force at one time, a couple of years ago, that sat down, Slow GE Free participated in that task force. I have a copy of that report. which I felt was quite comprehensive. And, of course, the Board of Supervisors has seen it, so I'm sure that they will decide whether they want to recreate that committee or not if we decide to send that on. I would also like to make a couple of comments about the slow GE-free report. I think that it's important to note that Slow GE-Free is a paid lobbying organization. They are, their purpose and their rationale is to get rid of GMO products. They firmly believe that they are not a good thing to have in our society. The task force, on the other hand, was composed of people who made every effort to be objective, made every effort to look at all sides of the issues. Slow GE-Free was at almost every meeting. Maybe the first one they weren't there, but they were invited to make a presentation, and thereafter a few of their members attended every meeting. So there was lots of input. Additionally, there was an extensive bibliography, you may recall, from the task force's report, and all of the materials that were mentioned and brought to the task force were included in that bibliography. That bibliography is available. I see, Mark, that you're shaking your head. If there was something that you brought that we did not include, then we will, by all means, amend that and include it. And that bibliography, all of the articles that were brought to us are available to the public at the Public Health Department. And the bibliography itself is available on the website. So my comment about it is simply that the task force was made every effort to be fair, made every effort to present information without making any value judgments. The comments I've heard tonight are basically value judgments. And everybody has their own opinion, and I think that we've tried hard not to use that opinion as part of our report. So, those are my comments.
Do we get a chance to respond to your comments?
You always want to respond to everything I have to say, Mark. We have a motion on the floor. That's my part of the discussion. Is there any other discussion? Okay, then we have a motion. I don't think I need to repeat it. I think that we should, let's just try a show of hands. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Abstain. Okay, the motion has passed unanimously by the Health Commission to send the reports, all three of them, officially to the Board of Supervisors and to recommend that the Board of Supervisors set up a task force to further study the GMO issue. Okay, now, is there anything else we want to do? Commissioner Donnelly.
One of the other things I just wanted to mention, because no matter what comes out of this, if we adopt a moratorium in this county on growing GMO crops here or not, it's one of the things that that I think is most important is community education, because putting a moratorium on growth in this county, I mean, we get our food from all over the United States, all over the world, and so it's not necessarily going to protect anybody from any perceived problems. So one of the things that I would like us to discuss here is maybe somehow to, one of the things I would like to see is community education about GMO and alternatives to GMO, and so that our people in the community can be educated about that.
When we get to the Education Committee report, we'll probably expand on that concept. Is there anything else, any other commissioner input on the GMO subject? Okay, then this is closed. And we will move on now to the Public Health Department report, which is not being given by Dr. Thomas.
No, not tonight. It's being
Dr. Thomas in absentia.
Being given by Jeff Hamm for Dr. Thomas, who's on vacation this week. I believe you've all received a copy of the one-page summary of about five issues that Dr. Thomas asked me to brief you on this evening. The Board of Supervisors recently approved a staff recommendation to implement a medical marijuana ID card, which is in compliance with the state law, compelling counties to do so. Staff is preparing a fee analysis and will be returning to the Board of Supervisors within the next several weeks to actually implement that program. It's been real hot recently. That created a health problem. Public Health convened several county departments to respond to that threat and visited single-room occupancy hotel to make sure that residents were tolerating the heat. It's been a very interesting response statewide from counties and other local and other government agencies, and we'll be convening event debriefings to learn as much as we can from that experience, what we did well, what we didn't do as well as we could have done, both locally and statewide, so that we're more prepared for those situations in the future. Read recently that unless things change in terms of the global climatic conditions, we can expect every year an increased number of days where temperature exceeds 95 or 100 degrees. Sacramento, I read an article where they expected a 100 more days per year than they currently have where it's going to be over 100 degrees. So it's certainly going to become more of a problem for us, not less. West Nile virus activity is a bit lower than in last year at this point, but we did have our first bird test positive last week. It was a barn owl up in Paso. No mosquito pools have tested positive yet, and there is a mosquito abatement West Nile virus report attached to the summary from Dr. Thomas. Prop 86 will be on the November ballot. Staff will be going to the Board of Supervisors and asking them to support that initiative. It will raise taxes on cigarettes, and there are a lot of entities that were involved in getting that on the ballot and will be involved in lobbying for it heavily and who stand to receive quite a bit of money if it passes. It will provide funding for smoking, anti-smoking programs, tobacco education, as well as children's health insurance and emergency medical care funding. And then the last item is on the tobacco retail licensing ordinance. We will be taking an item to the Board of Supervisors on September 19th, asking if the board would support the development of an ordinance, and if they would, to direct us to come back with one. There was an article recently in the paper about stings in the city of San Luis Obispo, and I think they attempted to catch some 40 or so tobacco retail sales establishments and found zero. Oh, it says two dozen. I'm sorry. I guess I misread the article. San Luis Obispo City is one of the jurisdictions in this county that has an ordinance similar to the one that we'll be presenting to the board for their consideration. I'll do my best to answer any questions that you have about any of these topics, if you have any.
I was just curious a little bit about the tobacco retail license. What exactly is that proposed for that ordinance?
There would be a fee charged to all retail establishments that sell tobacco products. The money would be used to fund sting operations, primarily law enforcement, sheriff's office, since it's an ordinance that would cover the unincorporated areas of the county, but also some health agency staff, primarily tobacco control staff, who would be involved working with law enforcement to develop and carry out these sting efforts, which are very young-looking individuals who go into stores and attempt to buy products, and then to check and make sure that they're being carded, essentially, in the retail establishments. If they're found to violate the law that precludes them from selling to individuals, to minors, then they're fined.
So basically what it's giving is giving the county money to be able to monitor more closely if people are selling to minors. Is that kind of how it works?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Good.
I have a question. How much is this fee? And this is a statewide proposition, is that correct? and it's split among all the counties.
The tobacco retail licensing.
I'm sorry. I'm
talking about Prop 86.
I'm mixing up 86 and retail licensing. How much is the retail licensing in addition to what they would normally pay to cover this process?
Well, the board hasn't directed us to develop the ordinance yet, and I'm stalling to try and remember what I've read in the draft staff report about how much the fee
the
would be.
Okay.
Can I guess? Between $50 and $100.
Okay.
I hope.
Okay.
No.
No.
It's $250. A lot less than Prop 86 is going to cost.
Just a reminder to commissioners, we are going to hear information on Prop 86 at our October meeting. That's our plan. So we'll look forward to that. Any other questions? Commissioner Hetherington?
Quinn, Jeff, what's the budget right now for the sting operations? And your Prop 86 money will go to a lot of different areas, not just sting operations. Are those broken down into budget units? Or?
If I understand your question correctly, those are two separate things. Prop 86 will generate a tremendous amount of money, but not for sting operations.
Right. Okay.
The
local, retail license.
Local retail licensing ordinance, which doesn't exist yet in the unincorporated of this area, this county, would generate a relatively small amount of money, but enough to cover the cost of conducting the surveillance to the sting.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you very much for giving the report.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. We're on to the next agenda item, which is Health Commission updates, starting with the chair's update. I have a couple of things to update you on. One is that I will represent this body on the SLO County Obesity and Chronic Disease Prevention Task Force, and their first meeting will be in September. Secondly, Commissioner Chalousis will be unable to serve on the Domestic Violence Task Force. We, as you recall, at our last meeting discussed who would serve on the various as a liaison. So we'll be looking for someone who can fill that position, and I think it was the meetings were at 7:30 in the morning every other month on a Wednesday. I believe that's what it was, and I just wondered if there was anybody that would be. It's third Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. alternating months. I'm assuming this meeting doesn't last too long. It's being held at the DA's office, but I don't have any. Is there anybody that would be?
I'll try and do it.
Okay. Commissioner Hetherington then will be our representative. I think it's kind of interesting subject. I'm kind of interested in it too, but I don't know that I can commit. But maybe between the two of us, yeah, we could cover it. Okay. And thirdly, I will be attending the pandemic flu planning community containment subcommittee on the 22nd of this month, so I will report back to you if there's something to report. And lastly, just to state that we have received the Ombudsman reports for June and July. I know we don't have that on the agenda as a regular item anymore, but we are in receipt of those reports, and I was wondering how we wanted to. Do we just want to read the reports, or do we want to comment on them, or do we want to have the Ombudsman come see us every couple of months? I think you mentioned something about this in the past, Commissioner Hetherington.
Yeah, and I think Mary was here earlier tonight, but probably figured she'd be at the end of the thing. So maybe we could invite her quarterly to at least make a presentation. I know the one thing that I've watched as I get the reports, though they're not consistently given to us, is that follow-up, follow-through. There's a lot of that terminology used, but yet you see some of the same things time and time again. So I think maybe having her present in the next few months for 15 minutes, would that be acceptable?
Would that be okay? We could have a report from her quarterly. So perhaps that might work out.
She would be on the agenda then.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And we're saying 15 minutes we think would be appropriate. Yeah. Okay. Well, we probably, how about September? Could we, would that be too soon to ask her to come in?
We were actually thinking the same thing, quarterly or something like that. So we'll ask her to come September?
Yeah, September would be good. We wouldn't want to probably see her in December because we don't have a lot of regular business in December. So we could do October, January, but we have a big meeting in October.
Let's start with September, and then we'll do it quarterly starting on, you know, the new year.
Okay. All right. And then that concludes my update. Are there any other updates from commissioners?
I have an update.
Sorry, Commissioner Hicks.
Believe it or not, I attended the HIV Consortium meeting, and it was very, very informative. Tom Kiefer was there, and he did a review of the HIV prevention RFP process for 2007 to 2010. And spoke about the augmented funding, and basically a lot of it was going to be the same as last year. And then it was very interesting. This is the same day somebody ran into the light, so we didn't get to have the slideshow presentation, but the Office of California State AIDS Advisory Committee was there. So that was interesting learning everything from them. And I was really proud to learn that our county does everything really well. And it made me feel really good about everything we do for the residents of our county that have HIV or AIDS and the things we do for their families. So I'm really glad to be on this committee, and I just want to thank everyone for that. And that's my report.
Thank you. Are there any other? All right. Then we'll move on to the committee reports. To my knowledge, the only committee that met in the last month is the Education Committee. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so we'll just move right to Commissioner Hetherington, who will give a report.
My apologies for the Legislative Committee not meeting, but I think we got response from one person, and Marcia's trying desperately to get us together. So depending on Penny and Susan, we may have two of us on the Legislative Committee. Now, on to the community education meeting. We did meet on August 2nd. In attendance was Ed, Lynn, Sarah, and me. Are we getting our picture taken tonight? I guess not. Well, the group is very concerned that our webpage needs to be updated. I would suggest if we don't have a new picture taken tonight that we take the old picture off. So that, you know, maybe you just list the health commissioners until you can get a photo of us. We want to work with Sonia about updating the webpage. We think that it is a good community education tool, and we can hit the ground running with all the GMO task force reports. Lynn contacted Bill Morum at the Tribune about getting us a spot that shows our meetings regularly. And he said you had to talk to Sandra Dewar, right? Okay. Have you talked to her yet?
No.
Okay.
I left a message on her voicemail. I have not heard back from her. And I noticed that we were not, there was no notice of our meeting once again in the Tribune.
Right. Another thing that the Community Ed Committee talked about was our brochure being updated. So I think each one of you have in your packet a copy of the brochure. Your homework for next month is to scribble on that, make some changes, get it back to myself or Lynn or Ed or Sarah. It wasn't? Oh, Sonia, I'm sorry. Anyway, Sonia will get them to you. So we would like your input on how to change some of the things where we need to update them. Another thing that we talked about was the Community Education Committee description in the bylaws. And I'm sorry to say I didn't bring a copy of I did bring it. And our charge is to educate the community about what the Health Commission is and how it operates, including our history, member selection, agendas, hearing issues, making recommendations, encouraging volunteer input and participation. And we're also to inform or educate the community about the Health Commission's recommendations to the Board of Supervisors and the Public Health Department. We want to take that a step further. We want to be able to work on projects and put them on our webpage and in our information brochures about things like what do you do with pharmaceuticals when they're left over, You know, we want to have specific issues that the commission is looking at so that we can educate the community. That may take a bylaws change so that we can expand that definition. So we could definitely have a bylaws committee meeting. I think that would be a good recommendation. And then maybe if there's any other issues or problems in the bylaws or recommendations to make changes, that would be the course of action to do so.
Refresh my memory as to who's on the bylaws committee. It's the
chairs of all the committees.
The chairs of all the committees and the chair.
And the chair.
Okay. I think that it is appropriate at least annually or every other year to revisit bylaws of any organization because times change and the people change. So we will have a meeting, if it's acceptable to this commission, of the bylaws committee to be time and location to be announced. And that will be certainly the expansion of the education committee will be the top of the agenda. Is that all right with everyone? I don't think we have to have a formal vote on that. Okay. So we will have a bylaws committee meeting sometime in the near future. And Commissioner Horn, you wish to make a comment?
Yeah, what I wanted to do was we forgot to talk about the preparing the guide to preparing for the pandemic flu. And this went out. I had not seen this before, and it went out to a meeting, and somebody gave it to me who isn't on the Health Commission and said, have you seen this? And I had not seen it. And so we've asked that copies of this go out into the public arena. So maybe libraries, maybe places like the county where they have information at the desk that you can help yourself to stuff like that. And then should we have a table at the farmer's market, then we could have things like this, which are, you know, with all this pandemic flu talk, we really want to have raise the awareness of people in the community as to what they can do to help prevent, and if they get it, what else they can do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I just ask a question? My understanding was there was a limited printing of these. Is that correct? Due to funding? Yeah. And if it is a nice little tool, and it would be, are these being distributed in the schools to parents? Mr. Hamm, would you like to comment?
Thank you. Yeah. Only to say that I don't know. I do know we did print up 5,000, and we only have 700 left. but what we'll do is we'll take a look and see what alternatives are available for us to either print more, or there may be, these are, I think, very nicely done, but there may be other alternatives for us that are close and that we could get our hands on for an inexpensive approach. So we'll take a look and see what we can do.
Could you let us know where they went? That would be interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe drop the color, do it in black and white, and I know that's a big expense.
Yeah.
So,
Commissioner Greer,
one of the things we talked about at the Community Education was the website and changing the website. We also talked about how quickly website changes can be made. And one of the things we had in mind are things just like this. If it's cheap to publish it on the website, if it could just be redesigned and someone can download it as a PDF file, how quickly are we able to make changes on the website? And who's involved with that?
Well, I'm just learning the answer to those questions. The county invested recently a tremendous amount of money in updating all of its web pages. The health agency has a tremendous number of them, and we have lots of people who are responsible for monitoring their content. Sonia is your person, and from my perspective, it shouldn't be difficult or take very long at all. But I'm told by some of my staff that it's not that easy. So.
And I'm very knowledgeable with this. Eugene and I can have this done quickly. get the change. Within 24 hours, we can have it processed and approved.
There you go. It's not what I've been hearing. It's not what I've been hearing all along.
Number of changes. Well, Jane and I
don't mean you. No, I'm not talking about you guys.
Depending on how many changes we have on the website and what you want. But if it's basic wording or adding a PDF file, we can have that difference.
And we produced this?
We did not.
Oh, okay.
We had that designed by a company, not
by the
agency.
We'll talk about that.
Okay, great. Well, I think we're moving forward with this concept, which is really what we said we wanted to do at our retreat. So, Commissioner Tesher, did you have a comment you'd like to make?
I just wanted to touch on, you started down the avenue of disseminating information through the schools, and I think that's a great place to do that through the PTAs. The website would be great, but some way we need to direct the public, the PTAs, the parents, towards whatever our vehicle of information dissemination is. But I'd like to see that. I'm a new PTA president this year as well, so I would love to see that avenue utilized a little bit more.
We got a project for you. Yeah. Cool. Okay. We have come almost to the end of the agenda. The last subject is the upcoming meetings. I think that we all are aware of what we had planned in our retreat. So our next month, we expect to have the agri-terrorism planning update, the pandemic flu response plan, and vulnerable population, how to prepare for emergency evacuation, and the long-term care ombudsman. Does that sound, that sounds like what we're going to do? And then we have planned programs on in through January. So, and those are in our minutes, which are accessible on the website.
May I ask one question, please? We got a letter today from a gentleman about the smoking cessation program that we have. Are we planning to address that next month? He seems to have some concerns, and I don't believe this is the first letter we've received.
That's the same one.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just say that I haven't read this one, but it appears similar to the one that we received, and I think that we have talked about. There was a response to this letter, was my understanding, but also that it is an issue that we should be looking at as a health commission, and we will get it in there. There's a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second? All in favor? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Great meeting.
See, now it's only 8:50.